This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. With Halloween coming up, I'm going to bring up a subject that's really scary to a lot of people, nuclear power. You know the arguments for and against it. Nuclear plants are expensive to build, potentially risky to run. And we don't need them because we can develop enough green energy to do without them. And no one wants one in their backyard. Unless, of course, you live in France, where they happily draw most of their non-polluting electric power from nuclear power plants. But on the other hand, if you want to do away with greenhouse gas pollution from fossil fuels, fracking and natural gas, and cut down on carbon altogether, perhaps nuclear deserves to be part of the discussion. One nuclear engineer has been thinking about an old idea to bring new nuclear power online, floating nuclear power plants situated miles offshore. If it sounds crazy, be reminded that we have lots of floating nuclear power plants offshore already. We call them aircraft carriers and submarines, running smoothly and safely for years, built in shipyards by highly skilled workers, and they live in no one's backyard. I wanted to hear more about this intriguing idea, so I invited him to fill us in. Nick Turan, nuclear engineer and reactor physicist working in advanced nuclear in Seattle, Washington. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
Nice to have you. Tell me how you got interested in this idea of floating offshore nuclear power plants.
Well, it really came as a natural result of just trying to understand what the major cost drivers of nuclear are, and then starting to ask the natural questions of what could be done a little bit better. And this, of course, involves reading through the archives and seeing what's been tried in the past and then comparing to the modern context. And as I looked into it and was talking to friends and colleagues about it, it really became quite interesting because of this sort of confluence of various elements of it that would make it both more acceptable for the public as well as most likely more cost competitive.
People have been coming up with new ideas to innovate in the field of nuclear energy, but this is an old idea that we might be able to resurrect. Let's talk about it. The idea has been floated since the 1950s, but we never built one. Tell me about this proposed Atlantic Generating Station.
Well, we did build several floating nuclear power plants, including something called the Sturgis, which actually powered Panama Canal for a little while. But that was very small scale. And so when it comes to large scale things, it's true that the Atlantic Generating Station was the first big proposal of this. And what the issue was there was a big electric demand off the coast of New Jersey, but there weren't very many good sites. And so somebody proposed, well, geez, can't we just put it on a floating platform of some kind? And a joint venture was formed between Newport News Shipyard and Westinghouse, and a huge amount of environmental work went into it. They studied all the different effects of the heat coming out of it, any different type of scenario that could happen at sea. And eventually they actually got a construction license to build 8 of these things in serial at a production facility in Florida. Now, what ended up happening, though, was because of various economic factors like the oil crisis and increased inflation, electricity demand flattened out. And so the customer went away. And so even though these things were pretty much ready to build and construct, nobody was there to buy one.
But you think it's time to think about them again. So I want to go through the pros and cons of them. For example, how do they float? Are they on a barge?
Yes. There are a couple different concepts, but that particular design is basically just on a barge. And they built a large concrete barrier, sort of an island around it. There are other concepts that people are looking into, such as folks at MIT, that involve building it more like an offshore oil platform, something that can sort of float on its own and also not necessarily need a big concrete protection around it. A couple other concepts. The Russians just put one to work in a village in the Arctic Circle, and it is just sort of in a protected port. So it's not far offshore. It just kind of came up to shore, and it provides power to the local community there.
What are some of the advantages of being floating on the water?
Well, It does seem crazy at first, but really one of the biggest challenges in nuclear safety is assuring cooling to the whole system. And when you are out floating in sea, you have a great overabundance of cooling. And so it's very difficult to challenge your ability to keep all the systems cool, which is necessary for the safety of the system. So from just a safety perspective, that's a big advantage. The other major advantage is that the construction environment in a shipyard is very controlled. It can be serialized at very large scale. And so you can get both improvements in quality as well as improvements in throughput. You can think of it sort of like a Henry Ford assembly line for gigantic low carbon power plants.
Because that's one of the criticisms of American nuclear power plants is that everyone's got their own design. There's really no standardization, is there?
That's right. And all the economic assessments going back many decades say, well, it looks like the way to achieve economically competitive nuclear is to pick a standard design, serialize it, and build a lot of them.
And you would be building it in a shipyard where they know how to build things that go floating out in the ocean, and they have very good quality control.
Precisely. And whereas a normal plant may be built in some sort of remote area where people are coming in and building roads and living quarters and all sorts of things there. And they're even building the infrastructure needed to construct it that's temporary. But in a shipyard, it's much better because you can build these permanent facilities that are designed, you know, very heavy equipment that can do the whole construction, not just of that plant, but all the plants that are coming in your order list.
And as I said before, we already have these floating nuclear plants. We call them submarines and flat tops. So there's experience, I guess what I'm saying, there is experience in the shipyard building of how to put a nuclear power plant in something that floats.
Indeed, that was the first thing we put a nuclear power plant in, really. I mean, all the plants that we use today, all the nuclear plants that are making electricity are descended from Admiral Rickover's original submarine-based design.
I remember the Nautilus.
That's right.
In a museum in, I think, Groton, Connecticut now. What about storms, high winds, waves? How do you build it so that they're protected?
Great question. And that is one of the major new hazards that exists at sea, but not on shore. And you have several options. The first option is to, when you're building a very expensive ship, you can actually afford to build it to be very resilient against storms. So the biggest ship in the world, which is called the Prelude, is a floating natural gas processing facility. It's designed to withstand Category 5 cyclones off the coast of Australia. So you can make these things that can handle a pretty crazy weather event. And then if something really nasty is coming in, you do have the option that you could just unhook from your subsea cable and move to some place where you may be safer. And then you have this worst case scenario where you would actually design in sort of a sink safe type scenario with a plan to go in and recover the material. So the engineers would basically design it so that if it did start being inundated by a storm, it would sink in a situation that would maintain coolability, keep all the radionuclides in until you could go down there and salvage the core.
You point out that in October 1981, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission reported that the floating nuclear plant units can be manufactured with reasonable assurance that they can be sited and operated without undue risk to the health and safety of the public. And that seems to sum up what we're talking about.
Exactly. And that was really, I had sort of heard of this venture, but until I wrote this little post about it, I hadn't really understood how far the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had gone in and studied it. And it really was the 1975 New Yorker article, which is a very long form description of it, really kind of made it clear how much they had done. And then when I went and read some of the environmental assessment reports, it was really impressive. So this has really been vetted in the 70s and 80s. So this is certainly an interesting idea.
Yeah, because that was a very strong time for the environmental movement. And if they vetted it at that time where there were huge critics of how the government was regulating things, that speaks highly of it.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about a timeline. Have you thought about how long it would take to build one of these? Because that's one of the main criticisms of nuclear power, is that they're very expensive and they take 8 to 10 years to build. On this scale in a shipyard, would that be smaller and lower?
certainly the first several, as you're hashing out the design, would take around that kind of time frame. But the throughput that I think you could achieve in this kind of scenario is significantly improved. And this is maybe one of the most effective ways we can cut that construction timeline. We could be talking about putting out gigawatt scale reactors on the order of 2 years instead of eight. And of course, that would take a lot of shaking down and a lot of success in the early units. But those are the kind of numbers we could start looking at. And so when you're talking about, hey, we have to replace not just all of our electrical generation in the world, but also all the transportation, the industrial heat, it's this massive amount of fossil fuel that we need to replace with something low carbon. And these shipyard serialized large nuclear plants are one of the most exciting ways that I see that we could do that.
So it would be like a production line, as you say. You'd just be able to put them all out from this one plant or a few of these plants, like car assembly lines.
Exactly. Yeah, and even the satellite image of the facility that's still there in Jacksonville, Florida, you can kind of see where they would have four of them under construction at once, and then one would float out, and then a new one would begin, and then they'd float another one out.
As a nuclear engineer, if you look at the old plans, could you just dust them off, or are there newer designs you would make?
Well, these plants are quite similar to some of the slightly improved designs that we have today from the big vendors like General Electric or Westinghouse, or even from KEPCO, the Korean nuclear vendor, just signed a MOU with their shipyard folks in Korea. And so perhaps the APR 1400, which is a Korean design, is the most appropriate one to put on a ship for the very near term, since they're so ramped up. We would probably want to take one of the designs that's currently being offered by the vendors and adapt it for a ship.
Might we take some of the French designs? They seem to have adopted the idea that, one design and make many plants out of them.
That's right. They're one of the best examples of showing that if you do serialize your production, you can decarbonize your entire electric grid on the order of 15 years.
There are other countries, right? There aren't the Russians looking into building these in other countries?
Absolutely. The Russians actually just completed building one, and it just went into operation, I think, earlier this year, the Akademik Lomonosov, which is a relatively small one, but still it's probably the best example of one of these things actually working. The Chinese are working on some floating reactor designs. And as mentioned, the Koreans just signed a memorandum of understanding. So they're starting to talk between their nuclear people and their shipyard people about getting into this business as well.
When you hear people talking of resurrecting nuclear power, they're talking of building smaller modular reactors instead of these larger ones. What's your opinion comparing the two ideas?
Well, the small modular reactors are actually kind of a very similar concept in that they say, well, we see that these large mega projects are just running behind schedule and are very difficult to construct on budget and so on. And so they decide, well, maybe if we can build these reactor components in a factory and then rail ship them to where the customer wants the power, then you could use the controlled environment of a factory to build these modules and move around. And so they're hoping to get economies of mass production, and they're hoping to do so in a way that will actually do better than economies of scale, which are what has traditionally driven nuclear power plants to be very large. Now, the shipyard idea is to say, hey, it's not one or the other. Why don't we get both economies of scale and at the same time achieve economies of mass production by using this huge factory of a shipyard? So they're actually quite related concepts.
I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. You know, when you talk with nuclear power experts, it always comes down to money. How much cheaper one form of energy is than the other? And right now, wind and solar produce energy very cheaply. So what is your argument about the cost analysis of building these nuclear plants?
Well, certainly nuclear construction needs to improve in order to stay in the game, because it's true, wind and solar have fallen in price dramatically over the last just 10 years. Natural gas, the fracked fossil fuel, is still at sort of record low prices. And so nuclear needs to do better. And the argument basically is that while wind and solar generators, the turbines and the panels, have absolutely decimated in costs, there's still a system cost associated with them, because you know, in the winter, there's a lot less sun than in the summer. And in and at night, of course, there's no, you have to have energy storage systems, whether that be pumped hydro or huge lithium batteries or some other kind of technology to deal with the intermittency. And so there's all these people out there doing energy systems modeling. And a conclusion that I'm seeing more and more is that as you go to very deeply decarbonized systems, when you're actually getting rid of your fracked gas, fossil fuel backup systems and replacing them with something low carbon, well, it turns out that if you have a low carbon firm energy source, whether that be nuclear or geothermal or even fossil with carbon capture, if that ever works, that that system as a whole is significantly cheaper than a system that's just 100% intermittent renewables plus huge batteries or energy storage.
When the Green New Deal was proposed last year, it emphasized wind and solar power, but it left out nuclear. If we aim to be using 100% renewables in the next decade, do you think nuclear power has to be part of that discussion?
I believe if we're serious about decarbonizing at that scale, then there's no choice but to have nuclear be part of the discussion. We talk about decarbonizing in 10 or 15 years, but as a someone who spends a lot of time looking at energy infrastructure and the scale of this problem, I can tell you that it is extraordinarily challenging to decarbonize at the rate that we need to. And I'm not talking about decarbonizing the next megawatt, but I'm talking about the whole system, which includes, again, the low carbon energy storage type and energy shifting technology. Nuclear in the United States makes more than half of our zero carbon electricity. And so it's already the climate champion in this country. And because it can run at night and through the winter at full power, it just absolutely has to be part of the overall story alongside the incredibly good wind and solar facilities.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you for being part of this discussion and bringing up this intriguing possibility about nuclear power.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Nick Turan, nuclear engineer and reactor physicist working in advanced nuclear in Seattle, Washington.